This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. I've heard a lot of other shows start like that, so I figured I'd try that out. What's up, guys? Welcome to This Week in the NFL here on Place to Be Nation. Sports Network 2.0. I'm your host, the Cowboy, joined by my co-host, the adorable John D'Amato. You like that one, John?
You guys are going to be running out of adjectives.
I know. By week 17, I'm grasping at straws. Especially, I use different ones in the write-up, too. So it's like there's only so many ways to describe you. So
Very creative. Happy New Year to yourself and the nation. I have to apologize. Wait, hold on a second.
This must be big if he's apologizing.
I just hacked up a lung or something. But yeah,
we appreciate the mute.
Last week I neglected to wish the nation a happy New Year and yourself. We were kind of under the gun. We both had some Friday night plans, and we were under a deadline, so we kind of banged it out. And I was talking real fast, and we skipped the pleasantries. So happy New Year, everybody, and I hope you enjoyed the first round. And let's get it.
Happy New Year, guys. Any resolutions, John?
I make a resolution every day. I just hope to be better than the last day. That's all. That's every day. That's not just for me.
That's sage right there. So I did. I went full resolution. Full resolution. I haven't had any caffeine, any nicotine, and I've been to the gym every day in 2019.
All right.
And changed up the diet. I feel like $1 million.
You're pretty. I mean, you exercise maybe not regularly, but you're not one of these guys that's going to be done by February 1st and never hit the gym again. So you got a good shot, man. And it's not like you're in the overweight or category, but that could be deceiving because people say to me, oh, why do you you don't need to work out or diet, you know, you look fine, but you know, looks at, you're the only one that sees yourself naked and. You know where the lack of muscle or the high body fat is.
That's true. That's true. And then just, you know, you're the only one who knows the way you feel too, right? So
sure.
feel better doing it than not doing it. So yeah. I'm hoping to keep it going. It's the first time I've told anybody. So John, you and the three people who listen to this show are in on my little secret.
Yeah. Now, fortunately,
Cowboy's going healthy.
It might be 2-1 after this week because, you know, a lot of our fans were Bears fans and they don't really have anything to look forward to anymore. We'll get to that. It looks like we'll get to that.
Yeah, hopefully they'll stick with us, you know, at least for the analysis on the Bears game.
Yeah, hey, listen, as a Giant fan, if I got to slum and do this every week, you know. And I'm sure I'll get to something that'll remind me of my weekly Giant rant, which is a very popular segment of the show. So
it's a good point.
If I go through that, then they could suffer too.
So before we get into the games, just any thoughts on the coaching hires? No real big splash hires. I guess Bruce Arians was the kind of most out of left field.
We could do another show, but it's like that certain organizations are losing organizations, and they stay losing because, you know, when you hire a coach that was 35 and 40 in college and got fired in college, and then you hire him to be a pro coach. what can you expect? But I guess they're just taking a shot in the dark. There's not really a rabid fan base out there in Arizona, so they could afford to do that. But to me, that will be a long shot if that goes through. I mean,
yeah, I think
because
they're looking at Vance Joseph over there, right, for the defensive coordinator too.
Yeah.
Another proven winner.
Yeah, I'm sure that the coach wouldn't have a clue. Well, I'm sure Joe will make a good coordinator. So sometimes guys that don't hack it as coaches turn out to be, they fit their mold as a coordinator, as we're going to talk about with the Chargers. Mr. Bradley had a very fine showing, and as a head coach, he wasn't he didn't exactly stun anybody as a head coach. So, but Gus Bradley, I'm sure if he has another fine game like that or shuts down your boys, that he'll be on everybody's list for HC next year to get a second shot.
Oh man,
yeah, you never know.
He was so bad.
Yeah, but sometimes these guys, they figure it out on the second try, which is also. Which is what the Jet fans are hoping for with Adam Gase, that maybe with a better quarterback and a better talent, that he'll find his niche in the and it's on his second team. A lot of guys have success on their second team, and we also know that it's too bad he can't play the Patriots every year in Miami. That's where his best record is.
I was gonna mention that we needed to talk about Adam Gase just to make sure they keep us on the air here at Place to Be Nation. We've got to spend a minute or two on Mr. Gase. I don't hate the hire. I don't love it. I mean, the one thing he has done everywhere he's gone, even Miami to a point, is he's been good for quarterbacks. He's good at developing quarterbacks. So I question him on just about everything else, but. Even if he's there for 3 years and he develops Darnold, mission accomplished, right? And then if they have to move on, they have to move on. And there's obviously the potential for more. But I think the one thing it does is I would really, really be surprised if they went after Le'Veon Bell now, because other than developing quarterbacks, what Gase is most known for is running back timeshares, and you don't go pay Le'Veon Bell $17-18 million to fill the Bilal Powell role on the offense next to Isaiah Crowell. So, but all in all, I think it's a good hire. I think it's a better hire than if they would have hired Mike McCarthy, and the other guys are fairly unproven. So between the Jets and Cleveland, those are the two really the two glamour jobs on the market because of the young quarterback talent there. And I like what the Jets did. I actually like what Cleveland did, too. I know there's been a bit of an outcry about why not just leave the guy in as the offensive coordinator, leave Greg Williams as the head coach. But, Greg Williams has enough baggage there that I can see them doing what they did. And obviously that guy did wonders for Mayfield, so hope to keep it up.
It's interesting how the fan bases reacts. Everybody wants like the new young hot coordinator or the hot guy out of college, and but sometimes like the old guy, like in Denver, that might be a good move. With Fangio, especially they got Kubiak back as offensive coordinator, so that's pretty much going to be like a shared thing that way. Kubiak was the head coach there, and I'm sure, and Fangio doesn't really have much of an ego, so he's going to be taking a lot of directions from Elway and from Kubiak. So I think that's got a chance radar to work out there.
Denver's got the personnel to try to just mirror what the Bears did this year, don't make mistakes on offense. They have a good two-headed running back, and just dominate on defense, like you said. I mean, they have some studs on that defense.
Yeah. But it's interesting how the fans react, and how pretty much how guys that like were proven winners, the fans of teams or coach makers, he's want no part of, like McCarthy and even Caldwell gets shit on like as the worst coach. Like he's like a Hugh Jackson, Caldwell, he won a Super Bowl as a offensive coordinator. He made it to a Super Bowl as a head coach, and he took the friggin' Lions to the playoffs twice. The friggin' Lions, they make the playoffs about as often as I get a swipe right on Tinder, and he took them to the playoffs twice. So
you see what I mean, Matty Patricia didn't take them to the playoffs.
But then again, a perfect example, because I was talking with an old friend of mine about and he's a Jet fan, and I was saying, I was kind of saying about Caldwell, and he asked me, he was like, well, would you like Caldwell to coach your Giants? And I said, hell no. So I can understand. It's just something. It's just something about him. I don't know.
Not a lot of charisma.
There's just something. That's just an example, though. I mean, these guys and McCarthy won a Super Bowl, but I guess. But they really the fans didn't want to know part of them, so it's just interesting how the perception. But you never know. That's all I gotta say. You never know. Out of the coaches, out of the eight coaches now, six of them were hot assistants on their first team, and two of them are I wouldn't even call them reach reads, but they didn't have luck on their first team. Well, Reed was very successful with his first team, and of course the one that didn't have success with his first team, that's just a once in a lifetime situation where the coach, they're going to the greatest coaches of all time. How that worked out. Actually, the Patriots are his third team, but the second team was only for one day as a head coach. So.
Doesn't really count. Doesn't really count. Hey, we're happy to have him, but I mean.
Oh really? That's great, because I know your Patriot fans are hard to please.
I have a good story. I remember being, I think it was at Disney World. It was a long time ago. I was a kid and teenager, maybe a little older than that, but. I remember me and my dad were talking to a guy at the pool, and the guy was from Cleveland, and the Red Sox had just signed Manny Ramirez. And, my dad said something along the lines of, "Hey, thanks for Manny Ramirez." And the guy said, "Well, thank you for taking Bill Belichick."
Wow.
So he wasn't very well thought of, is what I'm saying. Oh, and then, the rest is history. But.
I would like to write you. That would be fun if you ran into that guy.
Yeah, that's the ultimate freezing cold take, right? I mean, that's it. All right, so let's get into the games. John, I mean, I hate to say it, but things kind of went according to form based on what we said. Colts Texans, Colts 21-7. Colts went up 21-0. The game was really over early. Colts really played out the way that you broke it down for us last week. Colts won this game in the trenches and with their defense. Texans just couldn't get anything going offensively. The Texans defense played pretty well after a terrible start, but it was just really kind of a poor home performance by the Texans. You get a home playoff game, and I mean, they really put up not a whole lot of resistance, but I think the Colts team's for real. I mean, they're 9-1, right? 9-1 in their last 10 games, and only loss being to Jacksonville. And they pose quite a threat to Kansas City. That offensive line and that defense is I think people are finally starting to notice that's a strength, two strengths for them.
The Colts team is for real. They're probably going to be they're probably going to have a few chips in the next decade. The 2020s are going to be they're going to be one of the top teams. They got young studs on both sides of the line. They're two guys that made All Pro: Darius Leonard, Quentin Nelson. As rookies, they made the All Pro team. So those are two home run draft picks. They just came right out, and they just said, "We're passing it to T.Y. Hilton," and the Texans could do nothing to stop them. That first quarter was ridiculous. They just the Texans had like four or five guys on T.Y. Hilton, and they couldn't stop them. And then they put it right down their throat. And then they kind of coasted. But I was surprised. They even chewed up a lot of their clock, or just running Marlon Mack right at the Texans. Just flat at home. It's like I don't understand. J.J. Watt and the defense couldn't fire up his defense. They're just flat. They were never in this game.
They did shut him out in the second half, but I mean, to your point, the Colts weren't exactly trying to push the ball downfield either. But that line is just one of those lines. It's like the Cowboys line a couple years ago, where I don't think it really matters who's on the other side of the ball. If they want to run, they're going to be able to run a little bit, and they keep luck clean. And man, they are not a good matchup for Kansas City. That doesn't mean Kansas City can't win the game, because Kansas City absolutely can win the game. But if you wanted a blueprint for a team to beat Kansas City, right? It's good enough defense to get a couple of stops. Running game, because Kansas City's historically bad. One of the, I think, the 10 worst teams historically in NFL history this year against the run. And I mean, it, like, and being able to throw it. Like, I mean, I have trouble seeing Kansas City's defense stopping Luck and that offense more than once or twice in the game. And it's really, really tough to win when that's the case.
Yeah, especially if Mac keeps running it like that, because Kansas City have been very soft on defense.
Anybody but can just run on them. Never mind. I mean, he's playing good. I mean, but even like shitty running backs and shitty run offenses run all over them. So if they want to play the game of keeping Mahomes off the field, I mean, Kansas City's defense, unless there's some gigantic improvement over the bye week, is not going to put up a lot of resistance to that running game.
Yeah, I just want to cover one more thing before we bury the Texans.
Dead and buried.
Yeah, this is going to be a little ranty, but the fourth quarter, it's 21-0, and Deshaun Watson, on the one touchdown drive, he made a couple nice runs but after every play, after every first down, he's freaking dipping and dabbing and dancing down 21-0. It's like, get back in the huddle. Look at the scoreboard. I can't stand when guys freaking celebrate and they're down, especially three touchdowns, and he's out there dancing and celebrating after his little first downs. An embarrassing,
performance. Especially with the clock's running.
Yeah.
Hustle up to the line. I agree with you.
Definitely rookie. Sorry, Calvin. Your boy has to grow up a little bit, man.
He's a great player.
It's not just him. I see a lot of guys. I see guys all over just celebrating, always down two touchdowns.
But he only did it after he got the first down, right?
Well, about three times.
He didn't do the Steelers mic drop when he was a yard short on fourth down, right?
That's
at the top of my list for the year. Guy acted like he just, you know, won on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when he didn't even get the fucking first down.
Yeah, that special teams guy that'll probably be the only time he touches the ball in his career.
That's Roosevelt Nix. He's the fullback. They don't use him that much, but
Well, that's it on the Texans. But looking forward to the Chiefs. Hopefully, they used their bye week to come up with a scheme and to come up with something on their defense, because they haven't stopped anybody all year, and that's going to be a spot where who's the defensive coordinator? Sutton,
right?
If they go down to the Colts, he's going to be on. Andy Reid's going to. I don't think Andy Reid will be in trouble, but he'll definitely make some moves in the coordinator position. And that's something where there's guys out there like Greg Williams or somebody that I could see a Reid making a move there if they go down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it's personnel. I mean. Yeah. They just got nothing. I mean, Derek Berry.
Nah, I don't think the Jones, the defensive lineman.
Oh, he's good.
He made all
good.
Pro.
Chris
sure.
Jones, yep.
D Ford, come on. Berry, has been hurt. He's questionable, but they have players. Houston, they have playmakers. They have to come up with something to get a couple stops. Give Mahomes a chance. Because otherwise they can be hearing it again. I mean, everybody's heard it before. Kansas City hasn't won since 1993. And as a matter of fact, the Colts have won as many playoff games in Arrowhead Stadium as the Chiefs have, both with two. So that's hard to believe right there.
With all that said, Mahomes is the MVP. It's a great offense. It really is. It really is a great offense. And the Colts defense is good, but I don't think they're good enough to. I think it's going to be nip and tuck. I think it's going to be a very exciting game, a lot of points, and I think Mahomes will pull it out at the end. The home field advantage, I think, is big in Arrowhead, but it's not going to be easy. That's my prediction. Not going to be easy. The 3-point game, maybe 33-30 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I'm making a non-confident whatsoever pick with the Chiefs. I just think that they're going to come up with something just to stop the Colts a couple times. Maybe get a Luck kind of take some chances. Maybe get a turnover. But relying on anything from the Chiefs defense is a crapshoot. So
the one thing with the Chiefs, they haven't played a bad game all year. I mean, they played bad defensive games, but all their losses were close to good teams. I mean, they're going to come out and take care of business. It's just a matter of if they can get the one stop, right? They might not even need it, but it's like
maybe their defense will use the momentum of that last game where they held that juggernaut Raiders offense, the John Gruden genius Raiders offense. They held them to 3 points, so maybe they'll get some.
They're coming in hot. I mean, if they held them to three, game. I mean, the Colts are getting shut out, right?
The John Gruden juggernaut. They held the 3 points, so maybe they'll spur grinder. Their defense.
All right. Next up, another one. Seahawks at Cowboys. This one really, really played out a lot like we had thought, John, where, I mean, there's some stuff to talk about in this game, right? So, if I'm a Seahawks fan, I am not really happy with the way the game was called offensively. Clearly, the Cowboys' game plan was to sell out to stop the run, right? Just sell out to stop the run. And the Seahawks played right into that. They just, watching the game, they're just running into the line over and over and over and over. And I know that was their identity as a team this year. But the dichotomy where every time Russell Wilson went back to pass, he was making magic. I mean, he was phenomenal in this game. And I think it's borderline criminal the way they called the game. There was no need to be that conservative. Clearly, you weren't going to be able to run the ball. And, you know, I mean, they could have, by throwing more, they could have probably gotten the Cowboys out of that defense. But instead, it was run it into the line. And it ended up costing them. Score 24-22. Game wasn't really that close. Zeke did what Zeke does. The Cowboys D played well. Dak played really well. I thought he showed a lot of moxie. There was a big that 3rd and 15 at the end where he ran the ball for the first down. That was a great play. Even his interception was pretty blatant pass interference. I mean, it was still not a great decision to throw it, but they played. I thought they played a good game, and I thought the Seahawks' game plan was just fatally flawed. Those are my takeaways from the game. What do you think?
Well, you said it. They've been doing it all year, but they didn't. You got to adjust. You got to at least be a little flexible and come up with something different for the playoffs. But they were hard headed. Their offense shot 9 of the OC that they're a running team, and they're just going to stick with it. And
it's not like Lamar Jackson's their quarterback. You know what I mean? But, I mean, Wilson is capable of. He's great. I mean, he's capable of making plays.
Of course, because that was a difference in the game. The phenomenal play by Dak, and Wilson is just as capable of making a play like that. As a matter of fact, they're like two of the only four or five quarterbacks in the league that could make a run like Dak did. And Russell, but maybe Russell's weapons aren't quite outside of Lockett and Baldwin. Like a couple times, he was passing to their tight ends like Dixon and Vanette, and he passes 4 yards and their yak is going to be about half a yard.
Yep.
They have no there's nothing dynamic outside of and even Lockett or Baldwin are pedestrian receivers.
Yeah, so. I mean that one fourth down play to Baldwin was incredible. I mean that's like one of the best throw and catches I've ever seen. But
in Dallas, it showed you the greatness that they could beat anybody because they were dead the whole first half. They were down 6-3, and there's only a minute left, and they're deep in their own territory now, 3rd and 1, and Ezekiel Elliott just exploded for 44 yards, and that kind of woke them up. They got their first touchdown right after, and then even though they did fall behind in the third quarter, they took the lead again and up 17-14. That play by Dak was just That's a franchise play right there. A lot of people criticize Dak. Sure, he's inaccurate a lot of times, but there's only a handful of quarterbacks that can make that play like that. And especially, he's more dangerous because in the playoffs, he's going to go for that. Maybe in the regular season, he may not take that such a bold chance, but in the fourth quarter, he's deadly like that. He gives you that other dimension, because up 17-14, if they settle for a field goal there, it will be interesting at 20-14. If Seattle gets the ball back down 20-14, and if they imagine if they scored a touchdown 20-20 with the kicking situation, they would have had to go for two during a tie game,
yeah.
Because you saw that guy, that punter never kicked, never place kicked in his friggin' life. That guy Dixon, he tried right before at halftime in the warmups. He tried place kicking, and Pete Carroll said no way. He just shook his head. There was no way that kid was going to be able to kick. And you saw he couldn't execute the onside kick. So that would have been a fascinating thing to discuss. 20-20, and they would have had to go for two. But unfortunately, we didn't get that because
the
greatness of Dak.
I did notice how often they went for two. It was a lot of 2-point conversions, making it kind of a funky score. 24-22 is kind of a funky score for a game.
Yeah, what was the spread?
It was 2.5, I think. I think it was 2.5.
It was two. That's a
shame. kind of crazy how that works. But the
I think Tony Soprano had the Cowboys give him the points. So.
Yeah, and I think from the way you're talking, John, I think we might be on the same wavelength here. The Cowboys are going into L.A. where – do you call that a road game? I mean, it's going to be at least 40% Cowboys fans in that place, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, Cowboy fans are like bedbugs. They surface anywhere, and they
but especially there, right?
And you can't get rid of them, yeah, because the Rams, yeah, they don't really have no home field, and the Cowboy fans are going to travel well, so that's going to be a big difference. The crowd noise and all that's not going to be a factor, and Sean McVay has got to step up. He's got the label as the boy genius, the boy wonder. But last year, his team had his first home playoff game versus Atlanta, and he threw up a fart burger. They came out flat, and this Dallas team is better than that Atlanta team. So if he goes down again, the boy wonder with the 0-2 playoff records, it's going to be a lot of bloom off that rose.
Yeah, and I really think the Eagles did the Cowboys a favor, because I know that the Cowboys beat the Saints in New Orleans, but I think as we saw in the Chargers-Ravens game, sometimes, if the better team has already seen you, has seen your offense and can game plan to that, right, that they're going to be better the second time around. And beating New Orleans in New Orleans twice in the same year is no easy task, right?
Well, Dallas beat him at home, so this one will be in New Orleans. And
was that in Dallas? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it was in New Orleans. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No, but still, I would favor the Saints. We still may see that in the championship game, and I'm already playing my hand to where I'll be leaning towards, because the second time, I think now the Saints. Now that's a team that has a home field advantage, not right. Unlike the Rams, but
But I think so. I think I think the Cowboys match up really well to the Rams. I feel like the Rams have not been playing as well lately. And the one thing of all these the Cadillac offenses, the Rams have been the one that they've gotten stopped. Right, the Bears stopped them. The Eagles stopped them for almost the whole game. They can be stopped. Like the Chiefs, no one's really proven that they could really stop the Chiefs, right? But the Rams, Goff is, I like him, but I think he's just kind of a touch below that elite level, and I think he gets a little shook. And I think the Cowboys' defense is capable of shaking him, and I think they're very capable of keeping the Rams' offense off the field. The Rams aren't very good against the run either, which is a recipe for disaster against Dallas. And with Cooper and Elliott on that offense, and I think you alluded to this, and I was gonna say this, that even though their offense is a little sloggy sometimes, and some three and outs, and Dak is inaccurate sometimes, they have two just home run hitters. That if they can get a couple of big plays and let their defense play, I mean, that's enough to win games for them. So I'm going out on a limb. Cowboys are going to Los Angeles. The Cowboys are winning that game. How about them Cowboys?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't discuss this before. We come in cold and very boring. But, I already I already highlighted in my column. That's the one road team that I picked for this week was the Cowboys.
I swear I didn't read his column.
Well, that's even worse of an insult because yeah, if you don't read it, who's gonna, man? That's okay. I mean, you can read it tomorrow, but anyway, yeah, that was the one road team I picked, I don't see the Rams. Sue has kind of just been coasting this year. He hasn't been that dominant or run stopper like he was when he was with the
not dominant
with Detroit. Yeah, and Donald is more like a sack guy. You know, goes for the big sacks, but. They haven't been that tough on the run, but I will give the Rams hope that that maybe Gurley kind of coasted the second half of the year, and maybe he'll be healthy and well rested because he hasn't been used much the second half of the year. So maybe Gurley will explode and make some plays like he did in the first half.
They can win the game, obviously. I mean they're a very good team, and I mean. Dak's capable of a couple of mistakes, and I mean the Rams' offense is capable of hanging 42 out there too. But I just really, I really don't like the matchup for them. Like I think they would have had. I as crazy as it sounds, I think the Bears, because they've already seen the Bears, I think that was a better matchup for them than the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are really all wrong for them because they're kind of like the Bears, except like with a better offense. Right.
Yeah, I love the Dallas's defense though. They're well rounded. They got DeMarcus Lawrence on the line. They got the linebackers with Smith and Van Dash, and also Byron Jones, all pro as a cornerback. So they're well rounded. They got speed all over. They tackle well. I like their defense to pull it through.
Woozie's got to look for the fucking ball though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it. He's a good player too, but in that game. I mean, what was it? It was like at least four or five passes where because they were, for whatever reason, the Seahawks game plan was to go after him, and Wilson was throwing those, those moon balls he likes to throw, and Owusu-Aye just wasn't even trying to get his head around. And I mean, you're going to get called for PI more often than not if you just don't get your head around at all. So look for McVay to take a shot to Mr. Cooks at one point or another, hoping Owusu-Aye doesn't get his head around. We'll see what happens. Next up.
Also, it's interesting that everybody's playing, the teams that won last week are all playing in the same spot. Colts got the first game, Dallas got the Saturday prime, and even the Sunday, all the teams that won, they're playing in the same spot. So maybe that familiarity will help all the teams that won last week to pull the upset this week.
Well, we here at This Week in the NFL are hoping that it does not help the next team that we're going to talk about, and that's the San Diego Chargers, who...
San Diego?
We don't want them helped.
Los Angeles Chargers, sure.
Jesus. I do that all the time. I call
you
them
and
the
Stephen A. Smith.
I call them the St. Louis Rams, too, but... I don't think Derek Johnson still plays for the Chiefs.
You and Stephen A. Smith.
So Los Angeles Chargers, just a dominant performance, really. I mean, they gave up. It got interesting at the end. They, in typical Chargers fashion, kind of tried to give the game away in the fourth quarter. But both defensively, especially, I mean, they were phenomenal for the first three quarters of that game. And offensively, they did just enough. They were going against a very good defense. But it's a bit of a shame, right? The way the seeding works, in that the Chargers were the second best team in the AFC, and they're the 5 seed because they're in the division with the best team in the AFC, and they played like the second best team in the AFC. Bosa Ingram had just a ridiculous game. Like, he hasn't even had a great year, but. I mean, he was all over the place. I mean, he made Jackson's life a living hell. And they said the offense, Rivers did enough to get it done. They didn't need a huge game from him. It was mostly, you know, they got ahead, and it was the defense was doing their job and just watching the clock bleed away. So that's my takeaway from the Chargers. They're a good team, and as a Patriots fan, I am scared to death of that team. The home field is what keeps me chugging. I think we're going to win because of the home field, but they scare me. For the Ravens, They were, I thought it was ridiculous. Go to Flacco. I mean, the kid had a bad half, right? Jackson had a bad half, but Jackson got them there. And it's not like Flacco's fucking Troy Aikman in his prime on the bench or anything. Flacco was terrible this year when he played. And I think Harbaugh did the right thing by sticking with the kid. And kind of proved out at the end, right? The kid led a couple of touchdown drives. And, you know, he's 21 years old. The moment seemed a little big for him. The pass rush got to him. He was inaccurate. You know, he's not super accurate. He needs to improve that. But, I mean, I think he's a pretty unique player. And I think he's gonna really figure it out. And I think he's got a bright future there, and I don't think he should hang his head. I thought it was crazy how everybody was calling, the fans are calling for Flacco, and the announcers, and ridiculous. Anyway, that was my rant. So, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, once again, unfortunately, the show isn't called The Great Debate, because I agree 100%. That's the overreaction. A lot of times fans, they haven't watched all year. They just tune in for the playoffs, and they're like, hey, you know, this guy Jackson sucks. Let's get Flacco in. It's not – it was just the Chargers just adjusted, and because in the previous meeting 2 weeks ago, the Ravens just used their size on the offensive line, and they mowed him down, and they established a run, and they overpowered the Chargers. Now, this time, Anthony Lynn and Gus Bradley, who we discussed, they changed up their game plan. They went with seven defensive backs and the four linemen. And, of course, anybody else is going to look good when you have a game like Melvin Ingram. He just played that. That was like a Hall of Fame type performance. He was everywhere. And Jackson, let's not defend him, because like he fumbled like the first play of the game. You could, he was nervous, definitely. He's a rookie.
He didn't
but I don't
play
see...
good. I mean, he obviously didn't play a good game, but
yeah. But I don't see what Flacco would have done, because they were all over the place, man. Melvin Ingram was everywhere. Their just speed was just too much, and the Ravens had no answers for him. But I like how he bounced back, though, Jackson. And then the second half, that phenomenal play was where he just like ran around for like,
oh,
it seems like 45 seconds
just over the defensive
to Dixon,
back.
And then it's like
play.
Dixon was running in quicksand, take it to the house, motherfucker. I was like, holy shit, is that a running back or is that a tight end? I was like, Dixon, take it to the house. That play drove me crazy, but.
It was an incredible play by Jackson. And, I mean, yeah. They had the ball. They had the ball down, you know, down six with a minute left.
Yeah, that was unbelievable, too, that they even had a chance. But also the big thing was Rivers. Really, you could tell that he's really doing things different than he did in the past. He didn't do none of those gunslinger passes. There was only, like, one or two that were close to being picked. He was very conservative. They settled for a lot of field goals because Rivers is usually you know, like a riverboat gambler, and he usually throws it into double coverage a lot of times. But he didn't do none of that, and they didn't take no chances. And it helped. The conservative game plan helped. But I don't know if that same game plan is gonna be able to carry him through 2 weeks in a row, because he had a little more experienced squad this week.
I don't think that's the game plan against the Patriots. It can't be. I mean, that was the specific game plan for the Ravens. Be conservative, yep. Trust the defense, don't make mistakes, don't give the kid a short field. They have to be more aggressive against the Pats, because, you know, the Pats off a bye week are going to – I know the Chargers have a good defense. The Patriots are going to score some points. The Patriots are really tough at home. Really, I mean, historically – have been very tough at home and have been very tough at home this year. I think on paper, the Chargers are probably the better team, right? If you look at the overall body of work, but I think the Pats in Foxborough, too tall an order. I think they're going to get it done. They're going to get it done at home. I think it'll be a lot of the quick passing game to keep Brady clean with those pass rushers. So you see a lot of, I think it's going to be like a big James White game, a lot of Julian
Rex
Edelman,
Burkhead. Yeah.
Little Julian Rex. Edelman, and, you know, just the bing, bing, bing. And then defensively, it's the, you know, the bend, but don't break Patriots. The Chargers offense is good, but it's not, you know, not like Chiefs daunting where I think they're going to hang 35 on the Patriots or anything. I think it'll, you know, the Patriots will make them work, and I think it'll, I kind of think it'll look like a little bit like the Minnesota Patriots game where, you know, it looked going in like, hey, Minnesota might be the team that can come in here and win. On paper, they look good. And then the Patriots kind of just played their game, and it wasn't a blowout or anything, but it was a Patriots victory. So that's my true analysis, not just with my heart.
Yeah, I'm going Patriots too. It seems like Belichick has Rivers' number, really. As a matter of fact, isn't he like 0-7? I don't think has Rivers ever beaten. I don't think
he's never beaten maybe. Brady. No,
that's unbelievable right there. And yeah, you made a good point. What about Sony Michel is going to be playing, right?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I look for him, a little James White, Rex Burkhead, like you said, the little to cut off that speed, so those quick passes. I think we're going to see some Gronk action this week. He hasn't really been heard from much this year, and he should be well rested. I look for the Patriots. It's going to be a close game, but I think the Chargers played their best game last week, and I think they're finally their road dominance is going to end here.
I was thinking of taking my buddy Ryder to the playoff game, but then I saw that it was going to be like a friggin' 10 degrees, so we decided against it. We're going to probably do Buffalo Wild Wings. Free plug for you, Buffalo Wild Wings.
I think you should take them to Boneheads instead.
I know, but Boneheads is like further away. He might not make it through the whole game. Like, we might have to leave in halftime, so BW3 is right down the street.
It's a good, the Sunday 1 o'clock, that's a good time,
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Last but not least, game of the weekend. Big Dick Nick Foles.
Come on.
We talked about it on here that it's just, it didn't really play out. Like, I talked about how the Eagles could win, and it kind of involved Trubisky making some mistakes, which didn't happen. He actually played well. Like, I did not have any faith in him at the end to bring them down and get them into field goal range, but he did. He played well. But it was really just a very much a defensive struggle, as you thought it might be with those two teams. And Foles is just money. Foles is just money at the end of the game. I mean, that was a great drive. I mean, the Bears, if you told the Bears going into that game you're going to be up 15-10, right, with whatever it was, 6 minutes left, and you just got to get one stop. You got to get one stop, and the game's pretty much over. I mean, with that defense in Chicago, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better scenario, right? You just have to stop him from scoring a touchdown. And Foles just calm and collected, took him down the field. I love that fourth down play call with the little out pass to Golden Tate. Barely used him, and then that was just a perfect call. And, man, it's tough to pick against that team, John. It's tough to pick against that team. What were your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's Foles is the perfect example of how the quarterback gets all the glory and all the abuse when they lose. Because, I mean, come on, 16 points and, you know, he's getting all the friggin' praise. He led him to one drive. That other drive was a gift, too, because that's another big part. The previous drive, it was an 83-yard drive, and the Bears made a stupid penalty on a 3rd and 15 with that, you know, the defenseless head hidden. You got to be more disciplined than that. And then to follow up, Amukamara gives him like a 45-yarder pass to a PI where he's not looking at the ball. So that drive was really irked me. And getting back to Trubisky, he didn't have any turnovers, sure, but that first half, those three, they did nothing in the red zone. those three trips to the red zone, they didn't even come close to scoring. They had to settle for three field goals, and that was the key to the game. The Bears only got in the end zone once, and the Eagles took care of business in the red zone twice. And that vaunted Bears defense that wants to be compared to the 86 defense, unfortunately, they couldn't stop. But your boy Khalil Mack, I think Gruden was right in trading him. I think your boy Johnny knew what he was doing. That when Gruden has his Raiders ready to go on that playoff run, that five-year playoff run, he wants guys that are going to perform in the playoffs, and he knows that, you know, and the way that Mack played was kind of invisible. So I think, you know, Gruden knew something that we didn't know in trading him, because that's a lot of sarcasm behind that.
John and I were talking during this
game. Yeah. No, in all seriousness, though, Mack
We nailed it, though.
The Bears only had one sack, but then again, you got to give credit to the opposition. That's the Eagles. I've been saying it. I hate to be repetitious, but the Eagles one of the best offensive lines in the league and one of the best defensive lines in the league. So and they'll always have a chance to beat anybody. But yeah, the red zone was key. And once again, the worst part of the playoffs is fans that have been apple picking on friggin' Sundays all year, and that now they all just want, you know, this. Now they all want to tune in, and everybody, oh, Cody Parkey sucks, Cody Parkey should die, and all that nonsense. You know, get a life. The games, you know, is won before that.
You know, agreed. I thought it was plays. Ridiculous. He got booed off the field. I mean, he's not a good kicker. He missed.
No, of course.
He missed 10 kicks in the regular season. It's their fault. It's on them for keeping him on the team, you know. But
yeah,
I mean,
but the stupid fans want to feel better, saying, "Oh, if only we had a better kicker, we would have won the Super Bowl." They just want to point to one thing. There's 10 different plays in the game.
Yeah, and I mean that two. Like if he does make that kick, like I thought that Smallwood got in on that 2-point conversion. It was so close, but I thought the ball was over the. I thought the ball hit the line before. But I mean, it was really too close to overturn. But then that's, you know, that would be the other thing, but. I mean,
and also injuries are never an excuse, but there were two key injuries. Eddie Jackson, the safety for the Bears.
Yeah, I know he's active. You saw and didn't play.
The backup got kind of burnt on the tape. The backup kid, McManus, and that's Peterson, man. He'll find a weakness and he'll exploit it. And also a big key was Burton was out. He's really great in the red zone. That really hurt him because, like I said, those three first half trips to the red zone, they didn't even come close to scoring. So although Trubisky didn't turn the ball over, you know, a little inexperienced there, but out of the three first time quarterbacks, he played the best, but still not enough to get it done.
It was a nice drive at the end. It really was a nice drive at the end to get them into field goal range. And looking ahead, I mean, and the Bears have nothing to hang their head about. I mean, this season, I mean, they way overperformed expectations. You got a second next year. You're gonna, you know, you're still coming in with what was the best defense in the league this year. You've got a third year quarterback. A lot of quarterbacks make a leap between that second and third year.
Oh yeah,
and you know it's another year with the weapons. Like he finally showed some chemistry with Robinson. Robinson's a very good receiver who is pretty underutilized all season. He had a fantastic game. And they'll be back. I mean, they're going to be the odds-on favorite at the beginning of the year to win that division again. And I think they have a good coach. Matt Nagy's a good coach.
And that's
the
a good
future is bright in Chicago.
That's a good example of getting back to what we opened the show with about the coaches. You know, last year Bears fans didn't gather in a circle jerk when they announced that Nagy was appointed as head coach, and now that's how it worked out. I have a feeling that's how LaFleur with Green Bay. They weren't exactly Packers fans aren't exactly celebrating, but under the radar, he might be just what they need, low key and help offense. As long as Rodgers gives the approval, they might take a step up next
year.
But
it's kind of like Kingsbury in that. I mean, the Tennessee offense was like the worst.
Yeah, but at least the guy has pro experience. I averaged 70 points in the Big 12 playing against fucking kids that
it's like,
are
worn
out from studying all night. Man. You know, playing against non-scholarship fucking college.
Like, would you
defense?
Be happy if your team hired like the Chiefs defensive coordinator as their head coach?
Well, hey, let's give Sutton a chance. Let's see what he does with the Colts. But yeah, his job's gonna be on the line too. That's a rough one.
But I mean, I think, like I said, future's bright for the Bears. this sets up, I mean, but great win for the Eagles. I mean, what they've done is incredible. I mean, they went nothing short of incredible. They were dead, and they lost their quarterback, and this guy comes in and does it again. I mean, it's not going to be in Philadelphia, right? Because, I mean, they're married to Wentz, but he really, he should make some money somewhere.
Yeah, but also he showed his limitations in the with the, you know, with a couple picks. He's gonna give you a couple picks, and also that was like I think it's 110-4 teams that had no turnovers, and the other team had more than one. It was like 4-110. So that was a fluke, yeah.
And I'm not giving him. I mean, that's a really tough matchup. I mean, the Bears in Chicago is the toughest matchup in the NFL. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying the guy is Joe Montana or anything, but
no,
that last drive was very impressive. Very impressive.
It just goes that the quarterback just gets all the glory and also all the pain.
If you think about drives like that, like, I mean, it reminded me of like what Brady did. I'm not trying to be a prick either, but what Brady did to the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, where it was the Seahawks are the best defense in the NFL. They've got a fourth quarter lead. Brady went down and scored on him twice, but the same kind of deal where I mean, Foles, that situation was literally the toughest situation you could be in, right? For one drive in Chicago, need a touchdown, playoff game, and he came through. So I thought it was, he was up and down throughout the game, which is kind of to be expected. If you look at what Chicago's done to some other pretty good quarterbacks this year, it's to be expected, but he came through. So that leads us to...
Sorry, our boy Timmy was at the game. That's a rough one to be
at. Yeah, sorry, guys. Sorry, Bears fans, if you were there. I know the ending was terrible. But get to see an exciting game, at least. I don't know.
The future's bright for the Bears.
Future's bright. But we have the Eagles going to New Orleans. They're big underdogs. The way that Allen Robinson tore up their secondary scares you a little bit with a guy like Michael Thomas on the other side. The Eagles stopped the run, which, if they want to hang their hat on anything, the Saints are kind of quietly a bit of a run-first team. Like, the offense does revolve around Ingram and Kamara and establishing the run. And if you can make them one-dimensional, that's been the way to slow down that offense this year.
Yeah, the Bears did nothing as far as the running. And that was also another key, that Tariq Cohen didn't really hurt them out the backfield.
Right.
And that's that bodes well for them, because Kamara is the same type of back as Tariq Cohen. So,
but Drew Brees is in Mitch Trubisky, and it's in New Orleans, so you have to favor the Saints. You have to favor the Saints. But we've seen it a lot in sports where you really can't discount these hot streaks. Like, I mean, you kind of have to throw out the first 14 weeks of the season, right? And look at what Philly's come in doing. I mean, in order just to be in this game, right, it's a win at Los Angeles against the Rams in a game no one gave them a chance in, win at Chicago in the playoffs in a game that very few people gave them a chance in. And the Saints have to play a great game to beat them. And I mean, one of these weeks I'm going to pull the trigger and actually pick Philly. But I'm going to give you the same analysis as I gave last time. I think I like the Saints defense. It's good, but it's not great. I think Philly can move the ball on them, both on the ground and in the air. I don't think that I think Ertz is a problem for the Saints. And I think this game could very well, and I know, and I think that the fact that the Saints kicked the shit out of them, was it 52-7 or something a few weeks ago? I think that, if you look historically, I think that helps the Eagles. I mean, I look back to like the Jets Patriots a few years back, where the Patriots had beat them 45-10 or something 2 weeks before the Jets came into Foxborough and won. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Philly wins this game. I'm going to tepidly pick New Orleans, but wouldn't surprise me one bit if Philly does the same thing they did last week.
Yeah, I'm going with the Saints too, but once again, too agreeable, because a big factor is going to be that the Eagles have been playing for their lives for about 8 weeks in a row. They've been playing where one mistake can cost them their season. So they've been on that edge of win and go home. And the Saints have really just been chilling. They had a little drama to get the home field game in Pittsburgh. That was like a playoff game, but it wasn't like an elimination game. But that was high drama. But other than that, they had, obviously they were off for the bye week, and the week before they played nobody. They didn't even show up for that Panthers game. So the Saints are going to be a little rusty coming in, and that's going to give the Eagles a chance if they could take a lead and stay close in the third and fourth quarter. Man, Peterson and Foles just got that magic. So if it's close in the fourth quarter, anything could happen. But
that's exactly what we said last week, right?
Yeah,
exactly what
I'm definitely with the Saints, though. I like they got that Ginn is back to give them a little, because outside of Thomas, they really have nothing. But I like that Ginn's in there to make a couple plays. And also a Nagy, and maybe because him and Peterson, they were friends, and then they coached together, so they didn't try none of the Philly Dilly stuff. You know, Peyton, although sometimes it backfires on him, but he's going to try some Taysom Hill, some razzle dazzle stuff, which might mess up the Phillies. And also Peterson didn't break in. Everybody thought he was going to break it out last week on that fourth down play, but They pretty much played a traditional. But so this week, I think maybe from both sides, we're going to see some Philly Dilly, New Orleans, whatever, Jambalaya, Jake magic.
Should be a lot of fun to watch. Like, I think, you know, Philly's not going to win this game 16-15. You know, if it's a close game, it's going to be, you know, 31-28. Could remind you a little bit of last year's Super Bowl.
The Saints, the Superdome, that's a great place. The crowd's going to be amped.
That's the one thing. If the Saints can jump, if I'm a Saints fan, I almost need them. I need them jumping out 10-0, 13-0, something like that, because that makes it real tough for Philly. They're not really built that way to come back from this double-digit deficit. They haven't had to do it from, you know, during this run. But if not, if it's nip and tuck, it's really tough.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I think it's going to be they're going to be a little rusty. And Philly's been playing for their lives. They've been there for the past eight weeks. I think that Philly's going to come out ready, and the Saints, it might be a while for them to get into it.
Not to mention the way the Saints got knocked out of the playoffs last year. You know, close game at the end. If that starts creeping into the head.
You talk about guys. They got. Hopefully, Eli Apple doesn't get exposed. That's a guy that has problems looking at the ball, and he's got to keep his hands to himself. He's a walking penalty. So, just a heads up, is watching him a lot with the Giants.
Alshon knows him well.
And yeah, he's good for two. he's good for two PIs a game. So hopefully that don't come back to bite the Saints.
All right, buddy. So I think we've gotten our picks in.
We agreed on everything.
So
Cowboys, like the only
like we always say, you should go out and go the other way, although that wouldn't have worked for you last week, except for the Seahawks. Not that happened. I can't wait. It's going to be a great week of football. I say that every week, but this is really, you know, this is probably the best week of football of the year, right? Because it's really the best of the best, but you still got four games. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, the two weekends are the greatest. Although, you know, last week, yeah, everybody's complaining the first 3 weeks were kind of blah, but man, they just that last game was just everything you want as a football fan. Just people second guessing. And then again, there's a lot of stuff that I personally don't want as a football fan, where everybody just like, oh, Cody Parkey, you know, the Bears kicker suck, and all the stupid memes, you know, where it all comes down to one play, one kicker. I hate just blaming that one shit, but you know, sometimes that's how the game is.
True. Yeah. Right. So enjoy the games, everybody. Bears fans, please continue to listen to us. We need you.
Yes. And also check out the great debate.
Thank you.
The Cowboy was cheating on me with God damn. This is like the Mount Rushmore friggin' PTB Nation. You got Cowboy, Jordan Duncan, and JT the Boss. I mean, to hear our studs like that on one podcast, that's a rare opportunity. So make sure you tune into the Great Debate.
The Great Debate, it was really good. I had a lot of fun doing it. It was Andy does a great job hosting the show. A lot different format than we have here. I think you guys really enjoy
Andy's
it.
Andy's the hottest working man in 2019. He's got 72 different podcasts are rolling. God bless.
All right, and that's my only plug. I don't do I'm not involved in a lot of content because I put all my energy into this for you guys. So for John and the Cowboy, enjoy the weekend, and we'll be back next week.
And also a happy anniversary to one of the greatest shows of all time, The Sopranos.
Oh yes, everybody check out the marathons. Too much fun.
Watch Tony's gambling mishaps. All right, guys.
All right, we're out.